intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Unlike anything on the internet today, a place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant? Dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Well, welcome everyone to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 11th day of February in the year of 2022. And Cal, my friend Cal and I am glad to have Cal back. It was a great pleasure to have Paul English with me last week, and we had just one great discussion. But I'm really glad to have my friend Cal back for our regular Friday get-together. And, of course, prior to coming on the air, we were deciding, you know, how are we going to approach today's subject, this, that, or the other. And we brought up and we're talking about the deal in Canada with the truckers and what that can mean and the different viewpoints that people have taken on this. But before we take on that subject in the beginning, let's find out how Cal's doing out there in Arizona. Cal, how are you feeling today, buddy?
I'm doing good out here in Arizona. We're supposed to get up to almost 80 degrees today, so it's starting to be spring out here.
Oh, really, well, I hope you got the crops in.
Yeah, I got peas are up. Carrots and radishes got planted. Starting to get strawberries and cherry tomatoes already.
Ah, super. Well, I think this is a unique opportunity, Cal, and we can get to our scheduled subject just a bit later, but I think we have this unique opportunity today, Cal, because you were a trucker for 30 years. So, and we have talked about this, you know, what was going on in Canada, and there are people who feel like this is a good thing that these truckers have stood up and said, hey, government, we're not taking your crap anymore. And other people have said that the truckers are playing right into the government's hands because now we'll have shortages, we'll have supply line issues, we'll have supply line problems. But I think it's a blessing. And now I heard yesterday that there was possibility of a U.S. trucker strike, and now I saw this morning that it is absolutely, at least in the planning stage, for March the 1st. So tell us what you think about that, Cal.
Well, it's one thing about truckers is there is an independent streak within each trucker. I mean, it's, you know, you're on the road by yourself most of the time. You know, I mean, you communicate with other truckers and you see other people, but there's a kind of a fierce independence among truckers. And so getting them all to align and do something up in Canada is really, really amazing. I mean, it's how bad things really must be for truckers to all decide to do the same thing at the same time. I mean, if anybody that has that independent streak knows how hard it is to get in a group and do a whole, you know, go along with everybody else doing something. So, you know, one, it's amazing the Canadian truckers were able to do it, which is kind of a testament just to how bad things are. I mean, they're complaining about, you know, having to have a mandatory shot to cross back and forth across the border. I don't know if that's their only concern or their only complaint, or if they're going to, you know, use this and address all the rest of the overreaches of whatever the Canadian government's doing to them, and hopefully open the eyes of other people that, wait a minute, the government's doing this to all of us. And I've heard, you know, some of the narrative is that, you know, well, the truckers up there are doing this for everyone up there. And like I've heard it, you know, the other thing is, well, it's going to cause shortages and everything. Well, yeah, duh. Everything, people, you have. Look around your house and look around you. Everything you see, your house, everything at one time was on a truck. There's no rail yard to your house. There's no rail yard to the grocery store. Everything was on a truck. So, yeah, if the truckers united, they can pretty much control any country. They've got you by the balls, so to speak. It's just that, like I say, truckers have a fierce independent spirit, and getting everybody to do something at the same time is tough to do. I mean, it's just the way it is, especially like a lot of the it got to the point in Canada to where if you can't make money, you know, driving your truck, then why am I driving a truck? I'm not going to be driving this truck. I might as well, well, join this protest and go to Ottawa because it's, you know, it's kind of their last ditch attempt. They don't have firearms. They can't fire back on their, you know, on their government up in Canada. So they kind of have to, they're kind of having to do that. Where here in the United States, yeah, we still have arms. I don't know if people are ready to use them yet or need to use them yet, but there's always that, you know, the Canadian truckers' backs are against the wall, and them doing what they're doing, I applaud it. I hope the message comes clear and through to people, and when these shortages happen, because they're going to happen, I hope the people understand that this is a cause of the government's tyrannical actions, and the reaction of the truckers is just their reaction to the tyrannical thing. And if you all have to suffer through it, well, guess what? They're suffering through it too. So, yeah, stock up on, you know, go to the store, stock up, hoard, you know, it'll create the shortages faster. And maybe after people suffer a little bit, they'll decide that, yeah, we don't need this government. The government is what's in the way, not the people. It's the government. I hope I made that clear enough for people to understand.
Well, I certainly see it and understand it, and that's my viewpoint, is that people who are going to blame the truckers need to sit up and pay attention and understand what prompted truckers to do this. What prompted people to – it's,
yeah,
not
– they're getting mad at truckers. It's like, what, are they your servants?
Well, it's like, to me, it's like the government's opposition in this is like someone who shoots somebody and then blames them for dying. Make sense?
No, well, it makes about as much sense as, you know, somebody shooting somebody and they blame the gun.
Yeah, you know? Well, either way.
It comes down to responsibility. You know, one of those cornerstones of understanding liberty, it comes down to responsibility. Where does the responsibility lie? That trucker is not responsible for feeding your family. He gets paid to haul stuff from point A to point B. That's his responsibility, not feeding your family. Feeding your family, that's your responsibility. Not the government's, but your responsibility. And so I think that's a big point of what's missing is people don't place responsibility where responsibility lies. Of course, that goes back to a conversation we had Tuesday on your Teach Me True History class.
Well, very much so, Cal. Very
irresponsible.
Much. And here's the point, at least one of the points in my opinion, is that I stop and have looked back in the past 2 years what the government has done to choke up the supply line. What about all of these freight, all this freight in all of the harbors that can't get unloaded? And what about California's restrictions? I don't know. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't California put some kind of restrictions that you couldn't come into the state if your tractor was over 3 years old, Cal?
Yes, yes. The backup in of the freighters, of the container freights out off the coast of California, that's a cause of California laws and, let's put it on the Trump administration, which forced a Chinese national company, which owned the port of Long Beach, they were forced to sell it to a company back in March of 2020, they were forced to sell it to a Australian national company. And, you know, if anybody understands, you know, China and its belt and loop thing, and this, I mean, I'm not, you know, trying to praise China, but they understand logistics and they understand you need to move stuff from point A to point B. So China was getting ready to pay to upgrade the port. But then they got forced to sell it by the Trump administration. And so now they want to upgrade the port. But guess what? Now the American taxpayer gets to pay for it. So instead of it being paid for by the Chinese government, who was, you know, making money through the, you know, import fees and everything, that, you know, that's, you know, imposts. And, you know, so people are paying it not directly. Now you're going to directly pay for it. So, you know, just government is what messed it up.
Oh, very much so. And Scorpio
and California has made it to where, you know, you can't afford to drive a truck into the port. There's not enough money to drive a truck into the port anymore. They outlawed all the, you know, I mean, if anybody in California can back me up, but, you know, I used to run into California all the time and, you know, running down the freeways to get down to the Long Beach port, especially like Long Beach Freeway and all that. I mean, it was loaded with trucks, but these were older trucks. And, you know, they will not meet smog emissions in California anymore. And a new truck is, you know, pushing $200,000. Well, you can't make enough money, pulling containers out of the port to pay for that truck. So, you know, nobody's going to invest in, you know, pretty soon there's not going to be any trucks pulling stuff out of there. And the rail is, they're, I don't know what's going on with them. They could fix the problem, but the rail lines, Union Pacific, Southern Pacific, they're not doing anything to fix it. You know, but the main thing is you got to get that stuff off the coast and out of California to get it moving into the, you know, into the supply chain again, because like I said, California has made it almost impossible to truck. You know, I know a lot of truck drivers that will not and completely refuse to go into California. You can't pay them enough to go into California. They will not go. That's how bad it is in California for truck drivers. Sorry, Mark, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to fill that in. I mean, just, yeah, it's regulations that have caused this problem. Same regulations that have caused the Canadian truckers to go on strike or to do their protest, whatever you want to call it. Sorry, Mike, I didn't mean to interfere with you. Go ahead.
Well, Scorpio is telling me that by a text message, he's listening in as he works. He's telling me that the mainstream media is now blaming truckers and saying that what they're doing and their plans might interfere with the Super Bowl. Oh, my. Now I know I have to do something about the truckers. They may interfere with my damn entertainment. Holy crap. Help me out, Cal. I'm going to go to sleep.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't followed football in forever, professional football. I know there's a Super Bowl this weekend. I don't even know where it's played. I'm guessing it's in California. And I heard some rumor that they're going to block off the area. I don't know if it's Rose Bowl or wherever, whatever stadium they're playing it in. If it's in California, then the truck, I've seen rumors that they're going to block off access to it, which that will only affect the people with tickets. I'm sure that, you know, it'll still be broadcast. So I don't know. And if, you know, if the Super Bowl's more important to you than Liberty, then I think you have your priorities in the wrong position. That's just the view from my saddle, as you would say, Mike.
I would be willing to bet, Cal, that there are millions of Americans that would be absolutely terribly upset if the Super Bowl got canceled because of truckers. They would probably be beside themselves. If you don't believe it, just look at the idiots that show up for these games. I'm sorry, I used to be a sports fan myself, but I soon realized that this was all a major production. This is bread and circuses. And one of the things I distinctly remember going back many years, Cal, going back many years, and when a gentleman who had just won the most valuable player award in baseball in the National League, and I was in a conversation with him, and he said, he had just signed a, you know, like a $15 million a year contract, which is, you know, peanuts now, but back then it was something else. And his statement was, wow. I said, well, congratulations on your contract. It was Larry Walker. I said, congratulations on your contract. And he said, yeah. He said, it's vulgar, isn't it? And I said, pardon me? He said, yeah, they pay me $15 million a year to hit a ball with a stick. And he said, now, when it boils right down to it, how damn important is that? So even he got it. I'm sure the rest of them don't get it because they're all begging for more money all the time. They want more, 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 more money. And they're going to get money because people will pay to be entertained. They won't pay to be educated, but they'll sure as hell pay to be entertained. So, Cal.
They pay to be lied to. They pay for the comfortable lie, too, Mike.
Oh, yes. Very much so. That's part
you're
of
not getting rich doing what you do, are you? You're not getting rich doing what you do. You can't fly off from Florida to all over all points of the country and give off, you know, some supposedly constitutional seminars like, you know, the Sirenness of the Constitution, Chris Ann Hall can, do you? You can't do that. You can't afford to, you know, to do that because you're not giving people the comfortable lie. You know, I mean, especially lately, the stuff you've been talking about on the radio have been very uncomfortable subjects for those that are so completely indoctrinated.
Yeah.
You know, talking about Operation Keel Haul and then the, you know, prisoners of war missing in action. I mean, those were some pretty powerful programs in the last few weeks. And if anybody's missed them, I would encourage you to go find the archives and listen to them. Find out what your government's truly like, people.
Well, I appreciate the plug there, Cal. I've been trying to at least appeal to the common sense for any who happen to have that rare commodity these days. I've been doing my best. So, yeah. I can do without food.
Well, you've been affecting the hearts and minds of people, Mike. Mike, you've been affecting the hearts and minds of people, and that's where the true battle of liberty versus tyranny is. That's where the true battle of good versus evil is in the hearts and minds of each individual, and you've been affecting them. So my hat's off to you, and I am grateful and humbled to be part of it and grateful for your ability and your talents at doing this and for all the work that you've done. I just... Normally we do these plugs at the end of the show, but we'll start the show with it.
Well, I appreciate that, Cal. Thank you very much. And we've talked about the truckers. Let's jump to the subject that we plan to do for today. And it is, in essence, to and you and I talked about this, and I've talked with other people about it. How can anyone read the letters between the founders themselves, go to the actual everyday happenings at the Constitutional Convention, and still believe, still hold the thought that this Constitution was created to protect their freedom and their liberty? And even today, it still amazes me the number of people who will say, well, you know, gosh, this Constitution, if we use it right, we could, you know, if we would just make them adhere to the rule of law, or if we could, if we just did this, or if we did that. This government was designed to accomplish exactly what it's accomplished, people. And if you would take the time and not watch the stupid bowl, and maybe pay a little bit of time and a little bit of attention to the actual truths of history, you would understand this. And you would understand what lies at the core of your problem as you go about doing things. It's amazing to me, Cal, that, you know, and that's what we've been doing on Teach Me and Rebel Madman and Constitutional Fraud. That's what we've been doing, is trying to show the day-to-day happenings at the Constitutional Convention from late May till mid-September of 1787, and trying to show the characters who were there and what they were saying and what they were doing. They worked diligently for 4 months to make sure you didn't have any damn rights. They didn't go to Philadelphia concerned about your freedom. They went to Philadelphia concerned about their money and how to make more of it and how to use you as an individual to provide them with more money. It blows my mind. Cal, help me out here.
Well, you know, I've come to the understanding there was opinion that you're allowed to have these rights so long as your rights don't interfere with their plans. And if you operate on that premise, your rights aren't rights, they're privileges. And that, you'll notice that they call them privileges. You know, these are privileges, as if, you know, they're granted to you by government, you know, which is totally antithetical to the understanding of what unalienable and natural rights are and where they come from. So, I mean, in their own words, if you will take the time, of course, you know, the coach never taught you this in high school, in history or civics class. You know, you were taught to, you know, and then it's reinforced by the media and bread and circuses. I mean, there's a reason why they have this patriotic stuff before all this bread and circus Super Bowl stuff. And there's a reason why they keep everybody at a sixth grade level, because in sixth grade, you haven't quite reached that age of rebellion yet, have you, folks? So they keep you in a dumbed down state of sixth grade mental thought process so that you haven't even reached the stage of your teenage rebellion yet. So we have a whole bunch of adults running around through America who still rely on mommy and daddy, or in this case, the government, their nanny state. This is by design, and once you see it, I don't see how you can't see it, but once you see it, you can't unsee it. You just get frustrated and beside yourself watching a bunch of grown adults act like sixth graders.
Well, Cal, what we've been doing in the last few days on these lessons, and if people only knew that their wonderful their hero, their James Madison, their father of the Constitution, the father of the Bill of Rights. I've seen two blatant lies on Facebook about James Madison in the past couple of days that were just absolutely amazing. One of them says James Madison wrote the Second Amendment to protect the liberty of Americans. Bullshit. James Madison didn't write the Second Amendment.
Oh, sorry.
And then how many people would be all praising of James Madison if they knew that James Madison was insistent at the Constitutional Convention that the federal judiciary be able to overrule anything the Congress did. He wanted the unelected branch of government to be able to overrule the people. It's right there in the documents for people to read that he wanted a monarchy. And when Alexander Hamilton proposed a monarchy, Madison's comment was, damn, Hamilton let the cat out of the bag. And then there's the comment that, yes, this is a beginning for us. This is a start for us. This is not the do all to end all with the Constitution. We will move through the powers that we have in this Constitution. We will move through those powers to increase our authority over the years. And, it's just amazing that people really want to cling to these comfortable lies. So your thoughts, Cal? Oh, well, Cal, he's muted or he has fallen asleep on me. Maybe I put him to sleep. But, no, there he is.
No, I hit the mute button wrong. I'm here, Mike. Hey, Mike. The people want to believe the comfortable lie. Well, explain to the people what your grandpa had to say about that, why people want to.
Well,
it's so fitting. It's such a perfect analogy.
Well, my grandpa had the ability to get to the core of the problem in a very, very few sentences and in a very, very few words. And it was amazing that he, as a young man born in 1883, he had talked to a lot of our relatives, especially his relatives at the time. I wasn't around yet. But he talked to a lot of his uncles and others who had actually served in the Confederacy. 27 different ones that I've been able to find so far. And he was telling me and talking to me, and we were talking about perverted history. Now, this was in 1980s, early 1980s. We were talking about the perverted history as it had to do with the law to prevent Southern independence. So we were talking about this, and I said, Pa, why won't the people accept the truth about this? You can show them the truth. You can document the truth, and they don't want to listen. Of course, at this time, I wasn't into the founding era like I am now, but we were talking about the war, and I said, why won't people listen? And I'll never forget, he looked straight at me, and he said, boy, nobody wants to believe their mother's a whore. And I was stunned. And then I realized exactly he had cut to the bone of the problem. And that is, even if you present evidence, which we can do, irrefutable evidence about the war to prevent Southern independence and to the founding era, people don't want to believe that because their government is sacred in their lives. Because it's their government. As I believe it was, Jennifer said that she had talked with some people recently, and they said, well, when she pointed out how bad the federal government was, and they said, well, it's better than nothing. How the hell do they know? How do you know this government is better than nothing? That has to be an affiliation. When you stop and think that the people in this country look at the government as their mother. The nanny state, you said, Cal. And even if you can provide proof to a person that their mother is a whore, that their government is criminal and corrupt, they still... Oh, well, gosh, think how bad things would be if she wasn't a whore. Yeah. And then the people that really blow my mind are the people who believe that you, this government, this criminal enterprise, completely and totally criminal enterprise, they believe the way to change that criminal enterprise is to join it. So they vote for people to join it. And in reality, and I posted this, I made some people mad with this. I realize that some of them spoke up to me yesterday. But people vote because they're hoping they'll be able to pick somebody to do that which they are too damn cowardly to do for themselves. Thoughts, Cal?
Well, they also vote to have things done that they know that they can't morally do for themselves. I mean, they vote to rob their neighbor to pay for their kids to go to school. They can't go to their neighbor and just take money from their neighbor to pay for their kids to go to school. So they vote for government to go do it for them. So they're objecting their morality and their responsibility. And that's what government is. It is a, you know, one of the cornerstones of rightful liberty, and freedom comes from rightful liberty, people. That's just where your freedom comes from. One of the cornerstones of it is responsibility. And if you surrender your responsibility or you don't be responsible, then you've given up on part of your rightful liberty and consequently use your part of your freedom because of that. It's all related together. And, yeah, Mike, people, you know, they – responsibility and where responsibility actually lies, which is with each individual, a government skirts that. And that's the design of government, you know, of any centralized government.
Well, Cal, just to give people an idea, I posted a new lesson this morning. And we are at the point now in late August examining the Constitutional Convention in our studies. We are in late August when a committee was elected. Five people were elected to out of the Committee of the Whole to prepare a draft of the Constitution. Now, here is the what today's lesson was, and it's taken from that point in time at the convention. So here's today's lesson. While the current draft Constitution had not imposed voting qualification requirements on the states, it did authorize Congress to establish property qualifications for its members. People here, the people at the convention, were trying to exclude the ordinary people from government. They were trying to draw their exclusions to keep the people out of government. So the people who were in government could say, okay, you've got to own so much property to be here with us. That's why they called it the wealthy aristocracy. And so while Madison and others wanted the Constitution to fix property qualifications directly by congressional mandate, Benjamin Franklin was opposed and shrewdly declared that, and I quote, "If honesty was often the companion of wealth, and if poverty was exposed to peculiar temptation, it was not less true that the possession of property increased the desire for more property. Some of the greatest rogues he was ever acquainted with were the richest rogues," unquote. That was Franklin, I believe, just my personal belief, I believe Franklin was very near the end of time, and he knew it because he had to be carried into the convention every day. He was not ambulatory, couldn't do it on his own. So people carried him in so he would be there. And I believe, seeing the end was near, I believe, you know, I'm not going to start saying, well, you know, he became a Christian. I'm not going to do that. I have no idea about that. But from what he wrote about suddenly, you know, he wanted prayer. And then now to write this, that, you know, some of the greatest rogues he ever met were the wealthiest rogues. But then from what I refer to as the Ultra Federalist, Gouverneur Morris wanted to allow the federal legislature to set not only property qualifications, but all qualifications for any member of Congress. However, on August the 10th, The entire clause was struck out of the draft by a vote of 7-3, with only New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Georgia assenting to the congressional power to set property qualifications. So the lack of voting uniformity among the states and strong political opposition to what these people were trying to do was enough to strike out this highly restrictive clause of the draft constitution. So another offered change to the draft was to modify the draft requirements of an oath upon all state and national offices to support the Constitution. Okay, here's what the Federalists are doing. We're writing this thing, but we want to make damn sure that everybody swears an oath to adhere to it. Notice there wasn't any oath to a Christian faith. They did away with that. But they wanted everyone to swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution. And today, everybody in government does that. Their oath is to the Constitution, people. It's not to you. And to make you believe the Constitution is a good thing, they have created a whole series of lies. So, but they did include an affirmation clause, a clause necessary for such sects as the SCCTS folks, as the Quakers, was unanimously approved as a possible alternative to an oath. And of course, at this point, Charles Pinckney of South Carolina moved to prohibit all religious tests for any federal office. People, look what they were doing. You had to swear an oath of allegiance to government, but you could not swear an oath of allegiance to a Christian faith. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was inspired by God. Oh, yeah. I forgot. Pardon me all the hell. So on the organization. Mike? Yes. Go ahead.
Well, you said the vote was 77-3. That's 10 states. So there's three states missing. There's no Rhode Island's missing because they didn't go. I'm guessing that New York wasn't on this vote because they didn't have a quorum because it was in July when two of the delegates left. What's the other state that's not there that didn't vote in August?
Well, there was
New York. I mean, this in itself violates the current Constitution of the Articles of Confederation because it takes a unanimous decision by all the states to do anything. And so here these delegates representing these states are skirting the law right now, which, you know, of that time, which is the Articles of Confederation. So unless it's unanimous, they couldn't really pass anything anyway, could they? These are just little points I pick up, you know, in going back through this. It's just what a conspiracy, all the secrecy, and what a fraud the whole Constitutional Convention was. It was a complete violation of any law. Just a bunch, it was, you know, 55, no, how many people were at the convention? They got together and created a government for 3 million plus people at that time. And now 300 some odd million are still living under this government that was a fraud to begin with. It just blows my mind when you put it all into perspective. Yeah, I guess, you know, Coach was good at teaching you in civics, wasn't he?
Well, very much so. Well, the Articles of Confederation, which you talked about, required, Article 13 required that all states be unanimous in any agreement about government. The Articles of Confederation was still the Constitution when this convention was taking place. So when Rhode Island refused to attend, the Constitutional Convention was unconstitutional by the law of the day at that point in time. Yes. So it was unconstitutional. And now, as you pointed out, there were only 10 states voting. So usually what would happen in these, like, 7-3 decisions, Cal, you would have, of course, Rhode Island wasn't there, never was. New York had lost their vote in July when two of their delegates left, which left them without a quorum, so they no longer had a vote. And so there are two states gone. Now, sometimes in these votes like this, you would have the delegates. Each state only had one vote, but say you had four delegates, say they tied. Two of them were for it, two of them was against it. Well, then they weren't listed as a vote. Sometimes it was listed as a tie, sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes the delegations were just not present. And this is something, Cal, you asked me about a couple of weeks ago. And most people are unaware that New Hampshire's delegates didn't get to Philadelphia until late July. 2 months after the convention started, for 2 months, New Hampshire had no delegates. So it's, when we look at this, and it's a complete criminal conspiracy because they are criminally conspiring to overrule the Constitution of the day. Plus, the majority of them were sent to Philadelphia with explicit orders to only amend the Articles of Confederation, not to write a new document. But let me get back and finish this lesson, and then we'll discuss that to even more detail. Back to the lesson now. It says, on the organization of Congress, the ultra-nationalists tried desperately once more to restore judicial veto power over Congress. That was led by James Madison, little Jimmy Madison. How wonderful. An absolute executive veto, which was led by Gouverneur Morris. So here were the Federalists, these wonderful people that, you know, the Federalists that everybody thinks has everything to do with the Constitution. They were trying everything they could to not have three co-equal powers. They wanted a monarchy, and they were trying to get it at the Constitutional Convention. And it's, the proof is in the actual minutes from those days and from those sessions. But a long squabble came over the compromise provision to grant to the House the right to originate money bills, not amenable by the upper house. Now, that's an old Anglo-American tradition to preserve the control of money in the hands of those people who are directly elected by the representatives of the people. But here your Federalists jumped in again to keep that from happening. Now, remember, back then the Senate was appointed by the state legislatures. It was not elected. So the Federalists did not want the bills of money to be in the hands of the people. So they said and moved to change the clause to allow the Senate to amend any money bills, which effectively evaded the point of the whole provision. If you look at this day-to-day activity, hour-to-hour activity, you can see what the Federalists were up to and what they got at the convention. Okay, Cal, go ahead, buddy. Mute button.
I'm there. Well, you pointed to old Anglo tradition, you know, the direct house. So we're talking the House of Commons in England, in Great Britain. And so you have to understand what who were the people that made up the House of Commons. And that was the lower echelon below the Lords. You know, they had the House of Lords, who was they weren't the monarchy, but they weren't royalty, but they were nobility. Then you had the House of Commons, and these were the people that ran the individual fiefdoms out all along through Great Britain, and at this time, Scotland and Ireland. And so those were the people who represented the lairds or the fiefdoms who collected money from their peasants who worked for them. So it was just a continuation of the feudal system, and that's what they've designed. It's a monarchy that you have a president, and it's really just a reincarnation on a British monarchy. And that's what is existing today, and people just can't see it because I guess we're not taught that.
Oh, Cal, let's jump back in time here 100 or so years, 150 years, and 100 years. 100 plus years, and look at what Lysander Spooner had to say. When he said, and I'm going to tear up this phrase probably, paraphrase it a bit, but he said, this Constitution is either the cause of our problems or it is powerless to prevent our problems. And he said that, yeah, about 120 years ago. So, wow. He saw it back then. But we still haven't been able to wake up enough people to see it. Will we ever do that, Cal? Will we ever wake up enough people? Mute button, Cal.
I don't know, but there's some austerity coming up down the road real quick, and I don't know what it, I don't know what camp people will fall in when there's the shortages that are coming are going to happen, who they're going to blame for it. I'm pretty sure nobody will blame themselves and take responsibility that they were part of this problem by supporting this government, by insisting on this government, by defending this government, which is going to create these problems. I'm pretty sure people aren't going to blame themselves for their participation in it. That's about all I'm sure of on that, Mike. I don't know where people are going to land. Hopefully they understand that it's the government that caused all this. You know, it goes back to that old adage, you know, how do you affect someone without affecting them? People won't stop and think for themselves. They think what their TV told them to think.
Yeah. I don't know, Cal. I tell you what, you know, I'm trying, putting out these lessons, trying to let people see what the actual truth is. But, you know, and you and I both know, there's not really a whole hell of a lot of interest in the truth these days. As Jamie Johnson put in his song, the truth just doesn't sell well anymore.
Nope. But, well, like I said, you know, people are living in the alternate reality, and you know, reality bites. It's going to slap them upside the head. For the NCIS watchers, they're going to get Gibbs slapped. It's coming.
Oh.
I don't know what people's reaction are going to be to it, you know. I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be interesting times.
Hey, Cal, I was just going to throw something out. I was going to ask you if you heard about it. I don't know. but I heard someone say that the owner of Spotify, which is coming under all of this, you know, especially hope Neil Young will remember, and all of this other stuff, are you aware or can you tell me whether it's true or false or not, that the owner of Spotify was also a major owner of one of the companies that produces the vaccine?
I'm not aware. I couldn't answer that question on any, you know, until this Joe Rogan thing came up. I never even heard of Spotify. You know, I heard of Joe Rogan. I've never really listened to him, so. This one's completely out of my wheelhouse. So yeah, I don't have, I couldn't honestly comment on that one way or the other.
Well, I just thought it was ironic, but it would not surprise me to any detail if we found out that was the truth.
Well, Mike, you and I have been doing this for a long time, and you keep bringing up new things. And it doesn't surprise me, you know, the new truths you discover. You're about to expose one of them tomorrow on Operation Scorpio, and I'm looking forward to that. And what you say will probably come as a revelation, and it'll put, you know, more context into my understandings, but it probably won't come as a surprise, you know? I mean, The more you study history, the more unsurprised at how things happened is. It just, it doesn't shock you anymore. It just makes sense now. Things are the way they are because they were designed to be this way, people. I mean, I don't know. I think the Constitution and what's happened has exceeded the goals and plans of the Federalists. This is beyond their wettest dream of what's happened. It's because the people have embraced it. I mean, Franklin, you know, at the end of it, he said to, you know, has been said to have said, well, it's a republic. And then he added that quantifier, if you can keep it. So he had his doubts about it. And even the Federalists, they had their doubts about it. They didn't know exactly how well this Constitution they were bringing to the people, that they were bringing out, was going to be received, you know, and it was a battle and a struggle. And, you know, some of them figured it might last for 10, 20 years. And then even Washington and Madison spoke about it to each other. They said, you know, hey, if after 20 years, if this doesn't work, I think by then the people will be ready for a monarchy again. They actually said this to each other, you know. And hey, if this plan don't work, the people will be ready for a monarchy by that time once again. And it basically, in effect, if you look at, you know, how the president, which is a king, which is what Patrick Henry called him, president my butt, you'll have a king. He's paraphrasing Patrick Henry. But that people wrap the robes of royalty around the president, no matter whether it's a Democrat or Republican, he's the most powerful man in the world. Wait a minute, you give all the powers to one man to control the world? Are you serious, people? Really? Well, what happens if this guy's corrupt, which you have to be corrupt to be the president? Really? Come on, people, think. Oh, wait, we're not supposed to think. Sorry, I get off on my tangents. Trying to get people to understand it. I don't know how to go around sixth grade level.
Go right ahead.
It's difficult to explain principles of liberty, rightful liberty, and rights to a sixth grader. And if people are in a sixth grade mentality or way of thinking, it's really hard to communicate with them on principles such as these. I mean, it's kind of like trying to teach algebra to a kindergartner, you know, and until people are willing to be responsible and mature enough and cognitive, have some cognitive honesty with themselves and some intellectual honesty, then they're going to have to suffer. Unfortunately, the rest of us have to suffer with them. You know, that's just how it works.
Misery loves company.
I don't know how to wake people up. They do. Well, that look at all these people who got the vaccine. Since everybody else needs to have it, it's like, well, I don't want it. Why should I do it? Because you did it doesn't mean I want to do it. Of course, that's my streak of individuality coming out again. I've never been one to glom onto groups. But that's just me.
I don't know. There's some days, you know, just in all honesty, there are some days where you just want to go, what the hell? You know, and still what amazes me is that when you're trying your very dead level best to bring people the truth, they still want to fight you. They want to shut you up. They don't want you to tell the truth. They love their comfortable lie, and they don't want anybody messing with it.
Because they'd have to admit that their mother's a whore. My hat's off to your grandpa. I can imagine him doing a radio show. It'd last for, what, 5-6 minutes and have a whole 2 hours summed up. That's it, folks.
Well, I tell you what, he was the master of cutting to the bone, as I said before. One of the things he told me one time is he said, boy, don't try to make sense out of people that don't have any.
Perfect.
How deep is that?
That's, you know, Mark Twain said something similar. You know, he said, You know, don't argue with an idiot. They'll beat you down just because.
No, they'll bring you down to their level and beat you with experience.
Yeah, that's how it is. Yeah, exactly.
And he also,
your grandfather was another Mark Twain.
He also said it was like, picking a fight with a skunk, because even when you won, you smell bad.
Yeah.
So,
or if Cal, money really mattered, they wouldn't let you do it.
Yep, that's a good one.
They were trying to limit who could vote, weren't they?
Right.
We just went through this, right?
And people think they're
lesson.
Free.
Wow.
And people think they're free because they get to pick a new master every couple of years. Anyway, Cal, coming back on the flip side, I was just thinking about something. During the break, bring up the speech of Patrick Henry at the Virginia Ratification Convention on the 7th of June, 1788. And let's kind of go through that a little bit, because I have thought on multiple occasions that that had to be the most well-elocuted attack on the Constitution of the Federalists that was ever produced. So what do you think about jumping on that when we come back second hour?
You said June 7th?
June the 7th.
June the 7th. Yeah, if I can find it. This is the one you and DW went through a couple months ago, isn't it?
Well, I don't think we got all the way
through it.
Through
the whole thing.
Yeah, you couldn't
even get all the way through it, yes.
Now, you take point by point. It gets tough in a hurry. It really does. But, let's just take a few paragraphs of that and see if people – and ask, who would you believe, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton – or Patrick Henry? Of course, the only thing they know about Patrick Henry was that he said, give me liberty or give me death.
But he was the most, admittedly one of the most devout Christians in that time, who was totally against the Constitution.
Well, there we are. There's the music, folks. We'll see you on the flip side of Dare to Think Out Loud.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? You enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Welcome to the crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 11th day of February in 2022. And Cal and I had kind of a random discussion in the first hour and talked about several different subjects, truckers, constitutional convention, day by day, hour by hour. And then we decided that we would take a look at the speech of Patrick Henry on June the 7th of 1788 at the Virginia Ratification Convention. Now, here's a question you have to ask yourself. Why would a man who said, give me liberty or give me death, oppose this wonderful Constitution which was inspired by God? Well, I said years ago, evidently Patrick didn't get the memo. And also, one of the things that always intrigued me, the first time I saw it, I have to admit to you, I was a little shocked. When I first saw that letter from James Madison to Thomas Jefferson in 1784, and in Virginia they were having a lot of discussions about religious freedom. And James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, both of whom I seriously doubt were Christians, as a matter of fact, in one of his last letters, Thomas Jefferson said so, and we are familiar with his Bible where he took and removed any of the red letter as we grew up with, or any of the direct quotes from Jesus, and he removed those. So, and there is no record of James Madison being a Christian in any place that I've ever found, even though his father, James Madison Sr., pardon me again, was in fact a minister. but there is no evidence. But in that letter from James Madison to Thomas Jefferson, I believe, no, I'm sorry, it was the other way around. Jefferson to James Madison, Jefferson said in the letter, well, you know, we could fervently pray for the death of Patrick Henry. You remember that, Cal?
Yeah, I remember you pointing that out. That does come as a shock. Why was Jefferson saying that to Madison?
Well, obviously
Patrick Henry was a thorn in their side for some reason. Is there a specific reason that they were talking about?
Well, I think it was because you take the subject of the day was religious freedom. And Jefferson, I believe, was a deist. And there's no, you know, I don't remember James Madison ever saying anything that was religious in nature other than when he combined it with the political. There was no just outward statement of his faith that I can find anywhere in years and years and years of research. But we have this speech, and I will start with this speech, and then let's stop and talk about it. If I get to a point that you really want to talk about and clarify, Cal, just speak up. So Patrick Henry says, I have thought and still think that a full investigation of the actual situation of America ought to precede any decision of this great and important question. That government is no more than a choice among evils is acknowledged by the most intelligent among mankind and has been a standing maxim for ages. If it be demonstrated that the adoption of the new plan is a little or a trifling evil, then, sir, I acknowledge that adoption ought to follow. But, sir, if this be a truth, that its adoption may entail misery of the free people of this country, I then insist that rejection ought to follow. Gentlemen strongly urge its adoption will be a mighty benefit to us. But, sir, I am made of such incredulous materials that assertions and declarations do not satisfy me. I must be convinced, sir. I shall retain my infidelity on the subject till I see our liberties secured in a manner perfectly satisfactory to my understanding. You are told by Governor Randolph there is no peace, although you fondly flatter yourselves that all is peace. No peace? A general cry and alarm in the country? Commerce, riches, and wealth have vanished? Citizens going to seek comforts in other parts of the world? Laws insulted? Many instances of tyrannical legislation? These things, sir, are new to me. Now, what Patrick is saying here is these are all of the reasons that the Federalists gave for needing a new Constitution. So Patrick Henry just brings them up and he says, you know, they're new to me. He doesn't see them. And he said, he has made the discovery as to the administration of justice. I believe that failures in commerce, etc., cannot be attributed to it. My age enables me to recollect its progress under the old government. I can justify it by saying that it continues in the same manner in this state as it did under the former government. As to other parts of... Go ahead.
Mike, when you say old government, I think it's important to point out he's talking about Virginia as a colony under the crown. Just so people have a perspective of where Patrick Henry's speaking of. So when he says he recollects the progress under the old government, he's talking about the colony of Virginia.
Okay, good point.
It's important to understand the timelines in this and what Patrick Henry is talking about. So, yeah, he's talking about how things were under the crown. He's comparing the crown with how things are today in June 7th, 1788. So, you continue this next little part.
All right. As to other parts of the continent, I refer that to other gentlemen. As to the ability of those who administer it, I believe they would not suffer by a comparison with those who administered it under the royal authority. Where is the cause of complaint if the wealthy go away? Okay. Is this added to the other circumstances of such enormity? And does it bring such danger over this commonwealth as to warrant so important and so awful a change in so precipitate a manner? As to insults offered to the laws, I know of none. In this respect, I believe this commonwealth would not suffer by a comparison with the former government. The laws are as well executed and as patiently acquiesced in as they were under the royal administration, again the crown. Compare the situation of this country, compare that of our citizens to what they were then, and decide whether persons and property are not as safe and secure as they were at that time. Is there a man in this commonwealth whose person can be insulted with impunity? Cannot redress be found here for personal insults or injuries as well as in any other, as in any part of the world, as well as in those countries where aristocrats and monarchs triumph and reign? Is not the protection of property in full operation here? The contrary cannot with truth be charged on this commonwealth. Those severe charges which are exhibited against it appear to me totally groundless. On a fair investigation, we shall be found to be surrounded by no real dangers. We have the animating fortitude and persevering alacrity of Republican men to carry us through misfortunes and calamities. 'Tis the fortune of a republic to be able to withstand the stormy ocean of human vicissitudes. I know of no danger awaiting us. Public and private security are to be found here in the highest degree. Sir, it is the fortune of a free people not to be intimidated by imaginary dangers. Holy cow, Cal. Imaginary dangers. You think we have a nation in panic mode because of imaginary dangers? And here is a fantastic...
Yeah, well, they're not freemen, are they?
Yeah. And he says, fear is the passion of slaves. Our political and natural hemisphere are now equally tranquil. Let us recollect the awful magnitude of the subject of our deliberation. Let us consider the latent consequences of an erroneous decision. And let not our minds be led away by unfair misrepresentations and uncandid suggestions. There have been many instances of uncommon lenity and temperance used in the exercise of power in this commonwealth. I could call your recollection to many that happened during the war and since, but every gentleman here must be apprised of them. I have said that I thought this a consolidated government. I will now prove it. Will the great rights of the people be secured by this government? We know the answer to that. Suppose it should prove oppressive. How can it be altered? Our Bill of Rights, now he's not talking about the Constitutional Bill of Rights, he's talking about the Bill of Rights of the State of Virginia, declares that, quote, that a majority of the community hath an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform, alter, or abolish it in such manner as shall be judged most conducive to the public weal, unquote. I have just proved that one-tenth or less in the people of America, a most despicable minority, may prevent this reform or alteration. Suppose the people of Virginia should wish to alter their government. Can a majority of them do it? No, because they are connected with other men, or in other words, consolidated with other states. When the people of Virginia at a future day shall wish to alter their government, though they should be unanimous in this desire, yet they may be prevented therefrom by a despicable minority at the extremity of the United States. The founders of your own Constitution made your government changeable, but the power of changing it is gone from you. Whither is it gone? It is placed in the same hands that hold the rights of 12 other states, and those who hold those rights have right and power to keep them. It is not the particular government of Virginia. One of the leading features of that government is that a majority can alter it when necessary for the public good. The government is not a Virginian, but an American government. It is not, therefore, a consolidated government. Is it not, therefore, a consolidated government? The sixth clause of your Bill of Rights tells you, again, the Bill of Rights of Virginia, that elections of members to serve as representatives of people in assembly ought to be free, and that all men having sufficient evidence of permanent common interest with an attachment to the community have the right of suffrage and cannot be taxed or deprived of their property for public uses without their own consent and that of their representatives so elected, nor bound by any law to which they have not in like manner assented for the public good. But what does this new Constitution say? The clause under consideration gives an unlimited and unbounded power of taxation. That would be Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Suppose every delegate from Virginia opposes a law laying a tax. What will it avail? They are opposed by a majority. Cal, here I think is something that Patrick Henry is pointing out, is that the people of Virginia, by adopting and ratifying the Constitution, are giving up their rights to the majority of people in the other states. Is that a valid assertion?
Yeah, I would go so far as to say that by doing that, Virginia is surrendering her sovereignty. Because now, you know, enough people in New York, Connecticut, Delaware, and Maryland, which would be more than what the delegation of Virginia had, can tell Virginia what they're going to do. So, in essence, Virginia has surrendered her sovereignty. And that's what people don't understand, is the states surrendered their sovereignty when they acceded to the Constitution.
Well, I will continue.
And that made itself evident in 1861 when the southern states tried to assert their sovereignty, which they no longer had. What happened then? If they were sovereign, they could have just left, correct?
Correct.
Hey, we're sovereign. We don't want to be part of this. We're gone. See you later. Have fun. Hasta la vista.
Regardless of the reason.
No. Yeah, regardless, it doesn't matter what the reason is. You can do it for whatever reason you want to. It's a natural right to dissolve your political bonds for whatever reason or no reason you want to, because it's your right. So the states surrendered their sovereignty. That's another one of the myths that need to be dispelled out there. The 10th Amendment Center people need to understand this. The 14th Amendment people, all my southern, you know, friends, you need to understand this. The 14th Amendment didn't do it. This happened in 1788. The states surrendered their sovereignty. The states didn't create this Constitution. The Federalists did.
Well, to continue now with Patrick, he said, suppose every delegate from Virginia opposes a law laying a tax. What will it avail? They are opposed by a majority. 11 members can destroy their efforts. Those feeble 10 cannot prevent the passing the most oppressive tax law, so that in direct opposition to the spirit and express language of your Declaration of Rights, again he's talking about Virginia, you are taxed not by your own consent, but by the people who have no connection with you. The next clause of the Virginia Bill of Rights tells you that all power of suspending law or the execution of laws by any authority without the consent of the representatives of the people is injurious to their rights and ought not to be exercised. This tells us that there can be no suspension of government or laws without our consent. Yet this Constitution can counteract and suspend any of our laws that contravene its oppressive operation, for they have the power of direct taxation, which suspends our Bill of Rights, and it is expressly provided that they can make all laws necessary and proper. Or he doesn't say that. He said they can make all laws necessary for carrying their powers into execution, and it is declared paramount to the laws and the Constitution of the states. Cal, tell me he didn't just cover our three favorite points of the Constitution when we tell people you are terribly oppressed. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, Article 6, Clause 2, and Article 1, Section
Article
8, Clause
18. Section 8, Clause 18. The right. Necessary and proper. Yeah. You put those three together, and those are those few and enumerated powers that Madison was talking about in Federalist 45 that created total ability of tyranny and despotism and socialism. Those are socialists in construct completely before socialism was around.
Cal, it's kind of funny. I had a guy yesterday on social media when I brought that up, those three provisions. And I said, there's nothing you can do or say that can counteract Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, and Article 6, Paragraph 2. Those give the government complete authority and power over everyone. At their, whenever they decide, at their discretion. And he said, oh, well, if you only knew the rule of law, you would know that's not true. What the hell?
Well, that means the people aren't sovereign either. And you can't have liberty if you're not your own sovereign. So people need to understand, before the Constitution was ratified, the federal government had absolutely no say-so or jurisdiction over any individual in any of the states. Which is what it was either Lee or Grayson was saying when he was talking about the 10th Amendment and tried to add thereof to it.
Right. That was Richard Henry.
They wanted to exclude the people from being directly under jurisdiction of the federal government, of this new oligarchical monarchy they were creating. And so, the states surrendered their sovereignty, and when they surrendered their sovereignty, they surrendered the sovereignty of the people of their states. that's what happened, in a nutshell.
Well, let's consider on with Patrick. Let's keep going with Patrick here, and quote, consider how the only remaining defense we have left is destroyed in this manner. He's talking about those three provisions. Besides the expenses of maintaining the Senate and the other house in as much splendor as they please, there is to be a great and mighty president with very extensive powers, the powers of a king. He is to be supported in extravagant magnificence, so that the whole of our property may be taken by this American government, by laying what taxes they please, giving themselves what salaries they please, and suspending our rights and laws at their pleasure. I might be thought too inquisitive, but I believe I should take up very little of your time in enumerating the little power that is left to the government of Virginia, for this power is reduced to little or nothing. Their garrisons, magazines, arsenals, and forts, which will be situated in the strongest places within the states. Their 10 miles square, with all of the fine ornaments of human life added to their powers, and which are taken from the states, will reduce the power of the latter to nothing. The voice of tradition, I trust, will inform posterity of our struggles for freedom. If our descendants be worthy the name of Americans, they will preserve and hand down to their latest posterity the transactions of the present times, and though, I confess, my exclamations are not worthy the hearing, they will see that I have done my utmost to preserve their liberty. For I never will give up the power of direct taxation, but for a scourge. I am willing to give it conditionally, that is, after noncompliance with requisitions. I will do more, sir, and what I hope will convince the most skeptical of men that I am a lover of the American Union, that in case Virginia shall not make punctual payment, the control of our custom houses and the whole regulation of trade shall be given to Congress. But that's after they don't. And Virginia had prior to that. I think that's very important. But what he said here, Cal, is what I hope that we are doing our best to do. And it says, the voice of tradition, I trust, will inform posterity of our struggles for freedom. If our descendants be worthy the name of Americans, they will preserve and hand down to their latest posterity the transactions of the present times. Gosh, Cal, how important is that?
It's very.
Because here, Patrick Henry.
Unfortunately, liberty hasn't been handed down to posterity.
Well, it hasn't, but what he said here, Cal, is exactly what we are attempting to do. If we be worthy of the names of Americans, we should preserve and hand down to our posterity the transactions of the present times. That's what we're doing. We're trying to tell people what took place when Patrick Henry was writing this. And Patrick Henry knew that would be crucial to his posterity. And he said, I confess my exclamations are not worthy the hearing. They will see that I have done my utmost to preserve their liberty, for I never will give up the power of direct taxation but for a scourge. And he goes through that. I will do more, sir, and what I hope will convince the most skeptical man that I am a lover of the American Union. Well, we've gone through that. He said, moving here, he said, we shall depend on Congress even for passports, till Virginia shall have paid the last farthing and furnished the last soldier. Nay, sir, there is another alternative to which I would consent, even that they should strike us out of the Union and take away from us all federal privileges till we comply with federal requisitions. But let it depend upon our own pleasure to pay our money in the most easy manner for our people. Were all the states, more terrible than the mother country, to join against us? I hope Virginia could defend herself, but, sir, the dissolution of the Union is most abhorrent to my mind. Now, you have to understand that Patrick Henry, in opposing the Constitution, was being accused at that time of trying to destroy the Union of States. And then he brought up something else. The increasing population of the southern states is far greater than that of New England. Consequently, in a short time, they will be far more numerous than the people of that country. Go ahead.
Mike?
Go ahead.
Mike, you missed a sentence, and it's really important.
Okay,
But can I read this? Yeah.
Yeah, do it.
He says, but sir, the dissolution of the Union is most abhorrent in my mind. The first thing, this part you missed, the first thing I have at heart is American liberty. Where did Patrick Henry place the priority? On Union or on liberty? Where did Patrick Henry place liberty when he said, give me liberty or give me death? He placed liberty above life itself. So it's not hard to see why he would place liberty above Union. But that's important for people to understand that he's talking about liberty, and that actual liberty is actually more important than the Union. I just want to put an exclamation point on what he's saying there is what I'm trying to do.
Oh, well
done. The second thing is the American Union. He says that's second. But first, I mean, he's placing the Union, I guess, above life, but everybody has their own hierarchy of their own view of unalienable rights. Liberty should be first, then life, and then the Union should be like way down the list. But I just wanted to point that out. That, yeah, he said that the most important thing, the first thing at heart, in the hearts and minds of the people, is liberty. I just needed to point that out. But go ahead, Mike. Keep reading, because this is awesome.
Go ahead and read there for a second. I need to get some water.
Okay. The second thing is the American Union, and I hope the people of Virginia will endeavor to preserve that union. The increasing population of the southern states is far greater than that of New England. Consequently, in a short time, they will be far more numerous than the people of that country. So he's looking at the other states as other countries still. Consider this, and you will find this state more practicable interested to support American liberty and not bind our posterity by an improvement relinquishing our rights. In other words, he's saying, if we hang on to Virginia, we don't have to relinquish our rights. I would give the best security for a punctual compliance with the requisitions in order to pay the debts. But I beseech, gentlemen, at all hazards, not to give up this unlimited power of taxation. In other words, don't give the federal government the power of unlimited taxation, because that's total despotism. The honorable gentleman he's talking about, Governor Randolph, has told us that these powers given to Congress are accompanied by a judiciary which will connect all, meaning all the states. It'll affect everyone. On examination, you will find this very judiciary oppressively constructed. Your jury trial destroyed. At this time, there is no provision for a jury trial in a civil case in the Constitution being proposed. And the judges are dependent on Congress, those judges, the federal judges. In this scheme of energetic government, the people will find two sets of tax gatherers, the state and the federal sheriffs. This, it seems to me, will produce such dreadful oppression as the people cannot possibly bear. The federal sheriffs may commit whatever oppression, make whatever distresses he please, and ruin you with impunity. For how are you to tie his hands? In other words, how are you going to stop him? What are you going to do? What have you sufficiently decided means of preventing him from sucking your blood by speculations, commissions, and fees? Thus, thousands of your people will be most shamefully robbed. Our state sheriffs, those unfeeling bloodsuckers, he's talking about the tax collectors in Virginia. Our state sheriffs, those unfeeling bloodsuckers, have, under the watchful eye of our legislature, committed the most horrid and barbarous ravages on our people. So he's saying, even under the state constitution, the people are being beaten up by the tax collectors. What's going to happen if you have federal tax collectors that don't have any connection to the people at all? It has been required the most constant vigilance of the legislature to keep them from totally ruining the people. A repeated succession of laws has been made to suppress their inquisitious speculations and cruel extortions, and as often has their nefarious ingenuity devised methods of evading the force of those laws. In the struggle, they have generally triumphed over the legislature. Is this kind of like how the FBI and CIA today don't even listen to the Congress at all? It is a fact that lands have been sold for 5 shillings, which were worth over £100. If sheriffs thus immediately under the eye of our state legislature and judiciary have dared to commit these outrages, what would they not have done if their masters had been in Philadelphia or New York? In other words, it's hard to control these tax collectors under state authority. What's going to happen if they're under federal authority and have absolutely no ties to the people of Virginia? If they perpetuate the most unwarrantable outrage on your person or property, you cannot get redress on this side of Philadelphia or New York. In other words, you have to go to New York, Philadelphia to combat these people. You cannot get, and how do you get it there? If your domestic avocations could permit you to go thither, therefore you must appeal to judges sworn to support the Constitution. In other words, they're sworn to support what's necessary and proper for the general welfare of the United States. In other words, it's about the general welfare of the United States, not the liberty of the people. In opposition to that of any state, and who may be inclined to favor their own officers. When these harpies are aided by excisemen, who may search at any time your houses and most secret recesses, the people will bear it. If you think you differ from me, where I thought there was a possibility of such mischief, I would grant power with a niggardly hand. And here there is a strong possibility that these oppressions shall actually happen. I may be told it is safe to err on that side, because such regulations may be made by Congress as shall restrain these officers, and because laws are made by our representatives, judged by righteous judges. But, sir, as these regulations may be made, so they may not. And many reasons there are to induce a belief that they will not. I shall therefore be an infidel on that point till the day of my death. In other words, he doesn't believe the story that the Federalists are telling him. That's a powerful thing he's saying there about taxation. And if people look at what's going on today, he predicted everything that's going to happen. Has Congress, you know, made laws to keep the IRS from taking everything they want, or can the IRS, without any due process, garnish your wages? Just a question for people to consider. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm enjoying listening for a change here. I get to kind of rest my head. Continue on, please.
Okay. And then Patrick Henry says he's going to be an infidel, meaning I'm not faithful to this point. I don't believe the story. This Constitution is said to have beautiful features, but when I come to examine those features, sir, they appear to me horribly frightful. Among the deformities, it has an awful squinting. It squints towards monarchy. And does this not raise indignation in the breast of every American? Your president may easily become king. Your Senate is so imperfectly constructed that your dearest rights may be sacrificed by what may be a small minority. And a very small minority may continue forever, unchangeably, this government. Although horribly defective, where are your checks in this government? Your strongholds will be in the hands of your enemies. It is on the supposition that our American governors shall be honest, that all the good qualities of this government are founded, but it is defective and imperfective, and in an imperfect construction puts it in their power to perpetrate the worst of mischiefs, should they be bad men. And, sir, would not all the world from the eastern to the western hemisphere blame our distracted folly on resting our rights upon the contingency of our rulers being good or bad? In other words, are you going to rest your, you know, sacred and precious rightful liberty, which is endowed to you, upon whether or not you have a good or bad leader? Shew me that age and country where the rights and liberties of the people were placed on the sole chance of the rulers being good men, without consequence of loss of liberty. I say that the loss of the dearest privilege has ever followed with absolute certainty at every such mad attempt. If your American chief be a man of ambition and abilities, how easy is it for him to render himself absolute? The army is in his hands, and if he may be a man of address, it will be attached to him, and it will be the subject of long meditation with him to seize the first auspicious moment to accomplish this design. And, sir, will the American spirit slowly relieve you when this happens? I would rather infinitely, and I am sure most of this convention are of the same opinion, have a king, lords, and commons than a government so replete with insupportable evils. So he's saying that a monarchy is better than what this government that's being proposed. If we make a king, we may prescribe the rules by which he shall rule his people and interpose such checks as shall prevent him from infringing upon them. Uh-oh, we're back to the Cromwell comment he made way back in 1765, aren't we? But the president in the field, at any head of his army, can prescribe the terms on which he shall reign master, so far that it will puzzle any American ever to get his neck from under the galling yoke. I cannot with patience think of this idea. If ever he violates the laws, one of two things will happen. He shall come at the head of his army to carry everything before him, or he will give bail or do what Mr. Chief Justice will order him. If he be guilty, will not the recollection of his crimes teach him to make one bold push for the American throne? Will not the immense differences between being master of everything and being ignominiously tried and punished powerfully excite him to make such a bold push? But, sir, where is the existing force to punish him? Can he be not, at the head of his army, beat down every opposition? Away with your president. We shall have a king. The army will salute him monarch. your militia will leave you and assist him in making king. But didn't that happen in the Whiskey Rebellion, Mike?
Exactly, and that's
would
what
that
I
be an
just,
example of that?
Yeah, it's a perfect example of violation
and
of the
fight
Constitution.
Against, yeah, he says he will assist you in making. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Washington had a larger army than he ever did during any of the Revolutionary War.
To collect a tax.
Yeah. To collect a tax, huh?
Yes.
Imagine that.
He wasn't going up against a foreign country.
Your rights?
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, and then he goes on. What will then become of your rights? Will not absolute despotism ensue? Well, it's taken 233 years, people, but here we are. Mr. Henry strongly and pathetically expatiated on the probability of the president's enslaving America and the horrid consequences that must result. Isn't the current president trying to do that through dictates now?
Yes.
What can be more defective than the clause concerning the elections? The control given to Congress over the time, place, and manner of holding elections. He's pointing out that there's clauses in this Constitution that if the Congress decides to exercise it, they've been delegated authority to do it. They haven't done it on this one so much, but they can and will if they ever decide to. The elections may be held in one place and the most inconvenient in the state. Or they may be at remote distances from those who have the right of suffrage. Hence, 9 out of 10 must either not vote at all or vote for strangers. For the most influential characters will be applied to. Well, this is happening, isn't it? To know who are the most proper to be chosen. I repeat that the control of Congress over the manner, etc., of electing well warrants this idea. And, yeah, Congress does do that, don't they? The natural consequence will be that this domestic branch will possess none of the public confidence. How many of you people have confidence in the Congress? The people will be prejudiced against representative chosen in such an injudicious manner. The proceedings in the Northern Conclave will be hidden from the yeomanry of this country. We are told that the yeas and nays shall be taken and entered into the journals. This, sir, will have no avail. It means it won't mean anything. They may be locked up in their chests and concealed forever from the public, for they are not to publish what parts they think require secrecy. They may think and will think the whole requires it. Another beautiful feature of this Constitution is the publication from time to time of the receipts and expenditures of the public money. This expression, from time to time, is very indefinite and indeterminate. It may extend to a century. Grant that any of them are wicked, they may squander the public money so as to ruin you. And yet this expression will give you no redress. I say they may ruin you. For where, sir, is the responsibility? In other words, he's asking, how are they going to be held accountable to what they do? The yeas and nays will show you nothing unless they be fools as well as knaves. For after having wickedly trampled on the rights of the people, they would act like fools indeed were they to publicly and divulge their iniquity when they have it equally in their power to suppress and conceal it. Where is the responsibility? That leading principle in the British government. In that government, a punishment, certain and inevitable, is provided. But in this, there is no real actual punishment for the grossest maladministration. They may go without punishment, though they may commit the most outrageous violations on our immunities. That paper may tell me they will be punished. I ask, by what law? They must make the law, for there is no existing law to do it. What? Will they make a law to punish themselves? This, sir, is my great objection to the Constitution, that there is no true responsibility, and that the preservation of our liberty depends on the single chance of men being... I got lost my place. for their maladministered I got lost in it. I had to move the page. This is, sir, is my great objection to the Constitution, that there is no true responsibility, and that the preservation of our liberty depends on the single chance of men being virtuous enough to make laws to punish themselves. In the country from which they are descended, they have real, not imaginary, responsibility. For there, a maladministration has cost their heads to some of the most saucy geniuses there ever were. The Senate, by making treaties, may destroy your liberty and laws for want of responsibility. 2/3 of those shall happen to be present. Happen to be present. So if you only have, 3 senators there, only 2 of them have to decide. Can, okay, 2/3 of those shall happen to be present. Can, with the president, make treaties that shall be the supreme law of the land. They may make the most ruinous treaties, and yet there is no punishment for them. Whoever shows me a punishment provided for them will oblige me. So, sir, notwithstanding, there are 8 pillars, they want another. Where will they make another? I trust, sir, the exclusion of the evils wherewith this system is replete in its present form will be made a condition precedent on its adoption. But this or any other, by this or any other state. The transition from a general unqualified admission to offices to a consolidation of government seems easy. For though the American states are dissimilar in their structure, this will assimilate them. This, sir, is itself a strong consolidating feature and is not one of the least dangers in that system. 9 states are sufficient to establish this government over those 9. Imagine that 9 have come into it. Virginia has certain scruples. Suppose she will consequently refuse to join with those states. May they not still continue in friendship and union with her? If she sends her annual requisitions in dollars, do you think their stomachs will be so squeamish as to refuse their dollars? Will they not accept her regiments? They would intimidate you into an inconsiderate adoption and frighten you with ideal evils, and that the union shall be dissolved. 'Tis a bugbear, sir. The fact is, sir, that the 8 adopting states can hardly stand on their own legs. So he's talking about the states that have already ratified, other than Pennsylvania, which could probably stand on its own leg. Public fame tells us that the adopting states have already hurt burning and animosity and repent their precipitate hurry. This, sir, may occasion exceeding great mischief. When I reflect on these and many other circumstances, I must think those states will be found to be in confederacy with us. If we pay our quota of money annually and furnish our rational number of men when necessary, I see no danger from a rejection. So, you want to expand on this, Mike? What he's saying?
No, I think that's, it is so important, I think, that people actually hear this. Most of them are not going to read it. Hopefully, some people will be hearing this, is that in this speech on the 7th of June to the Virginia Ratification Convention, Patrick Henry disassembled the Constitution as written and also did one hell of a job predicting exactly what would happen. And he, even after New Hampshire ratified during the Virginia Ratification Convention, which gave it the 9 states that it needed, even after that, Patrick Henry kept telling Virginia, stay out, do not join this union. Stay out until they need us, which they would, because Virginia was the largest, the most populated. He said, let's stay out until we get the concessions that Virginians demand from this government. But unfortunately, he was didn't get enough votes. He worked very hard at it, didn't get enough votes, and James Madison was running around the convention at the same time, undercutting Patrick Henry as much as possible. promising the people that if you will just ratify this thing, the old Nancy Pelosi thing, let's ratify this, find out what's in it, and then we can amend it if we need to change it. And he actually changed enough minds, I think, to get the thing ratified, and much to the damage to rightful liberty in our country. Go ahead, Cal.
Yeah. Well, he's pointing out these eight other states that have ratified it and become, you know, this new American Union, that they need Virginia more than Virginia needs them. So we've got we have the leverage of negotiation here. And if you accede to this Constitution, you've lost that. You have surrendered that negotiating tool. You've surrendered your sovereignty, and you've rendered your people under the despotism of the people of these other states. I mean, these eight other states can now tell Virginia what to do instead of Virginia telling herself what she's going to do. And if these other eight states need help or whatever, Virginia can, on her own volition, help them out or not. And that's what he's pointing out. But I don't think people understand that. They don't understand how Virginia was its own country. I mean, he spoke of a republic earlier. He was talking about the Commonwealth of Virginia. He wasn't talking about this republic that everybody sees now. So it's important to understand the context in which he's speaking. And that's where mine ends, Mike. Does he go on from there? Because I don't have anything more than that. Or is that the whole thing? When I pulled up, that I'm sure his speech went on, but I don't have any more in front of me.
Yeah, it went on quite a ways. They just don't produce that on the internet. They don't show the rest of it. And we'll kind of hold that off. I don't think we can really get into all of it. But, folks, what I would like to read you here, and then I'll tell you where it came from. If we had a president who gave this as an inaugural address after his first term, now listen and see if you can tell me who it was. In the transaction of your foreign affairs, we have endeavored to cultivate the friendship of all nations, and especially of those with which we have the most important relations. We have done them justice on all occasions, favor where favor was lawful, and cherished mutual interests and intercourse on fair and equal terms. We are firmly convinced that, and we act on that conviction, that with nations as with individuals, our interests, soundly calculated, will ever be found inseparable from our moral duties. And history bears witness to the fact that a just nation is trusted on its word when recourse is had to armaments and wars to bridle others. At home, fellow citizens, you best know whether we have done well or ill. The suppression of unnecessary offices, of useless establishments and expenses, enabled us to discontinue our internal taxes. Wow. These, covering our land with officers and opening our doors to their intrusions, had already begun that process of domiciliary vexation, which, once entered, is scarcely to be restrained from reaching successively every article of property and produce. If among these taxes some minor ones fall, which had not been inconvenient, it was because their amount would not have paid the officers who collected them, and because if they had any merit, the state authorities might adopt them instead of others less approved. The remaining revenue on the consumption of foreign articles is paid chiefly by those who can afford to add foreign luxuries to their domestic comforts, being collected on our seaboard and frontiers only, and incorporated with the transactions of our mercantile citizens. It may be the pleasure and the pride of an American to ask, what farmer, what mechanic, what laborer ever sees a tax gatherer of the United States? Imagine that, Cal.
Well, that would be Jefferson.
Yes, his second inaugural.
His second inaugural.
He cut government in that first term. He cut government so much. Unnecessary offices, which he mentioned, and unnecessary revenue collectors. He cut it down to the point to where there was no internal tax. And then when he asked the question, what farmer, what mechanic, what laborer ever sees a tax gatherer of the United States? People, you see them every day. Tax gatherers are all around you. Where you buy your food, the tax gatherers are there. Where you buy your gasoline, the tax gatherers are there. Everything is about gathering taxes. It's called legalized theft.
Mike.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mike. While Jefferson was able to eliminate that, he did not eliminate, and it still exists in the Constitution, the power to recreate that which he eliminated. To constitutionally, which would be lawfully or legally, recreate those tax revenues or those taxes. So while he might have, you know, temporarily ceased, you know, having tax collectors on the yeoman farmer, the power for the Congress to do it still remained.
And they use it.
That's in the Constitution. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, that's just in case there's any of those, convention of the states people out there happen to be listening, take that to heart, that these powers are there. I mean, the Congress might not exercise them until they want to. But the power is there. It's been delegated.
We're about out of time here, buddy. We've about run out of time. I just wanted to tell people to tune in tomorrow to Operation Scorpio, where we will be discussing a very important topic. I hope everyone will be able to listen. And also on Sunday evening with DW and I in Addicted to Your Own Destruction, three channels on Telegram, Rebel Madman, and Constitutional Fraud, and Teach Me True History. Cal, thanks for helping me out, buddy.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mark. I'm humbled and honored to be a guest on your show. It's kind of overwhelming, but I truly enjoy it, and I truly appreciate it, and I'm thankful for the opportunity.
Well, thanks for your participation.
DW, if you're listening, it's glad to have you back. Yeah. DW, if you're listening, it's great that you're feeling better, and I'm glad to have you back on there. I enjoy listening. Paul English, if you're listening, I can listen to you all day long, and hopefully someday get into telling us about Churchill. How you really feel about Churchill.
There's the music, folks. Thanks for tuning in.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
0-9-E-0-5-1-7-3. We talk about decentralization and...